Hello, everyone, and welcome to Playwright, a podcast about creating and sharing new ways to play. My name is Ryan Heyman. You can call me H.
And I'm Ryan Quintel. You can call me whatever you want.
And why is that?
I don't know. I don't have a good reason. You can call me Q.
I felt like you were transitioning into something.
I know. I've, you know what it was? It was I thought maybe I had something, and then the confidence immediately seeped away from my body.
Sony just put out a state of play today as of the date of recording, so that kind of helps you backdate how long in advance we record these things, usually around a couple weeks or so, which I still think, like, you know, I know that, like, we really blazed a trail with Sound of Play and we created this entire brand, but, like, it's really not cool for Sony to be piggybacking off of all the hard work that we've done over the years, but who am I to get upset with them, you know? I noticed that one of the games that they pitched, which is called Humanity, is about kind of like moving these crowds of people around and running them into each other and doing all this, like, you know, crowd work, quite literally. So I was interested in that because we had just pitched a pretty similar game just last week, which won't be released until this coming Thursday. So really, it sounds like we're late to the party, but no, we got to it first.
This is the nature of now we're in year-round video game announcements from the major companies. And of course, we don't know what they're going to contain ever. Like, you know, you and I don't have...
I mean, I do, but...
Okay, well, fine. You do, but... Rest assured, if I pitched something, it was not stolen from any existing idea, or at least not on purpose. I mean, I always think it's pretty wonderful when you get the synergy of finding out that your idea does kind of exist in form, because that means, you know, we can play it. We don't have to wait for the loop of, like, hopefully someone makes this.
Yeah, and that, I guess that is fun, you know, to have an idea, get ourselves worked up about it, and then be able to sit down at a PlayStation and actually get to play it.
So
that's the dream.
I know a couple weeks ago, people heard you broadcasting live from the Microsoft headquarters.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about Project X Cloud. When can I get my hands on this thing?
Oh, that was announced today as of the day of recording, and I have not watched the announcement. So I don't know what we have and haven't said at this point. So I'm going to stay quiet until I get PR ready on that again.
You guys, if you ask H for anything about the next Xbox or xCloud, he actually just becomes a lot of rack-focused shots of processors and motherboards, and he just sort of transforms into an oeuvre feeling video about what the next Xbox will seem like.
I love that during the E3 where they announced the Xbox One X, they played that reel of developers talking about, like, how many pixels it has and that, you know, all the teraflops and stuff, you know, all the technical jargon. And one of the developers said, what was it, like, the most beautiful pixels or something like that? Like, it has the most realistic pixels. And it was such a striking phrase that I was really eager to go back to it when they released a standalone trailer and, like, cut it. For something, you know, just like it's a funny phrase. And I found when they posted the standalone trailer, they removed that one line. I guess it got such a reaction online. They're just like, oh, this never happened.
Speaking of like announcements about pixels, I found out recently that Sony just released a new they just released a new mirrorless camera. People are heralding it as having the smallest pixels. And I was like, there's something about that, and it just doesn't sound good, does it? The smallest pixels.
I mean, I guess pixel density is what it's all about, but yeah, I mean, it's not like a front of the box quote.
Right, exactly. You would, if anything, it even sounds better to say we have the largest pixels in the industry. You're like, well, I want my pictures big. I want nice big pixels, right? That's what I want.
Let's digitize our own thoughts and come up with the biggest of pixels. What are you, the previous host of a pixels-based podcast, going to be throwing us today?
Resident pixel expert has for you this week Tetris, but your city building. So imagine a Tetris game where You have blocks falling from the top of the screen. But what you're really stacking is blocks of housing, green space, commerce, maybe industrial, all that sort of mix of stuff you get in a city sim. And your job is to try and arrange livable units for people in maybe a never-ending tower, sci-fi, skyscraper city. So maybe you can imagine the camera's always sort of panning up. Maybe this needs to be a left or right, but I leave it to us to figure that out.
All right, we're starting the clock there. One of my immediate thoughts is buildings are fun because you can kind of like stack as many body pieces as you want. And like, you know, the buildings can just keep getting taller and taller until you put the roof on it. So maybe like roofs are a special piece. And so you would have these different varieties of block types, you know, industrial, downtown, I don't know, it's been a long time since I played SimCity, residential, commercial, that's the one. Like, maybe you would get like a pair of two, kind of like in Dr. Mario or Puyo Puyo. They would either have like a body piece or a roof piece. And so you have to kind of like match not only the buildings with like appropriate, you couldn't have like, I guess you could, huh, that's interesting. If you had like a layer of residential and then commercial and then another layer of residential on top, like what would that look like? What would that translate to? But like every building has to be capped off by putting an appropriate roof on it. And then that kind of like clears the row. And then like maybe that gets pushed to the background as it kind of builds out your city in 3D.
Oh.
And then at the end of it, you get this like 3D view of, you know, your city and see how kind of how I want to say industrious, but how economically successful the city is and all of that. I think it'd be kind of cool to be able to see it afterwards and see how it's thriving and functioning.
I agree. One of the things that might make this thing end up feeling a little bit like almost like Puyo Puyo is the idea of assembling those livable blocks, and maybe that's what makes them sort of disappear and like bang towards your score. But when you start talking to me about the 3D stuff, I almost started imagining, what if you skew this slightly isometric, but you're really only focusing on the sort of frontmost layer to the camera, and then you kind of can watch the city block get built, and then you're rated on how many blocks you're able to assemble.
So one of the interesting things about SimCity is having to manage infrastructure as well. And I can imagine for something like a Puyo Puyo type game, it would be a little bit, it'd be pretty demanding to have to make, you know, fire stations and police stations and schools and all the things that the cities need to function. Although maybe there are like special roof tiles that have like the police station symbol on it. And so depending on how big of a building you put it on, the police station can survey more and more rows. So like a 9-story police station obviously can reach quite far into the community. Whereas if you were to just drop a police station roof on the ground, then you're just getting like one police officer buried under rubble. I don't know.
Yeah. So you're basically looking at going back and forth and trying to create these little micro, maybe like per row of the city, you're asked to fulfill a certain need. The request comes in of like the same 3 meters that you balance in SimCity or City Skylines, where it's like jobs, shopping, and housing. Instead of trying to assemble little blocks, you're just trying to get matches that bring down the meter of that particular desire. So you're specifically trying to, or you're trying to not match those, right? So you're trying to create it so that those won't match each other. And so you're left over with as many residential or commercial blocks as possible per sort of timed tile.
Yeah, maybe you don't know exactly what you're building until you get that roof piece. So if you were to have a 5-story residential building and you drop a house roof piece on it, then it becomes like a mansion for one billionaire. Or if you drop like a public housing roof on it, then it becomes like a home that, you know, dozens of families can live in.
The Ruse essentially could act as power-ups or whatever. You get a number of matches of a particular type, and then it's sort of like
upgrade it, maybe.
Yeah, or you can call down a roof of a certain type, like by request.
And especially if you're able to kind of like shelve them, like Tetris pieces to use later.
I just want to play this game. If you're building row by row, maybe in a like city grid style, is there any way to do like traffic or something in there? I know you talked about utilities. Is there a way to like lay pipes down or something in the right place?
Possibly. I wonder about if you were to, if you needed to kind of like leave rows open, if putting a roof on a building kind of closes out a row, then maybe you would need to kind of like think about where the roads are going to go. Just like in Tetris, how pro players leave one row usually at the end open so that they can drop a line piece in there and get a Tetris instead of getting just like single line clears the entire time. I guess that would be kind of an advanced strategy for the players that really want to maximize their score and city effectiveness. But I think there's also kind of an inherent comedy to watching a city that was kind of poorly planned out because there's no planning necessarily.
Yeah.
And watch the cars try to scramble to get to where they need to be and like weaving between buildings and such.
Then that can be some sort of like comedy that plays out. On the last point about the roofs, I think it would be interesting to use, if roofs confirm a block, like you're saying, and kind of lock it in, maybe the roofs just come in three flavors, which you do by density that you see in those games. So you do high density, medium density, low density, and that's how you can kind of build up entire boards or rounds of, oh, people are specifically looking for low density residential. Okay, so I'm going to go and I'm going to snap in a bunch of low density residential stuff, or depending on how many you lock in, you can get those densities exactly where you need them.
So what about all of the stuff that has to happen underground? Like, let's say electricity, internet, sewage, that kind of thing. Maybe there's a way to kind of like hit a button and flip the world over, and then you're playing a game on the other side. So if one of these sides starts to be too much, then you can kind of go to the other side, you know, when you're about to fail, to try to, I don't know, make it easier for yourself to clear some space. You kind of get like a reverse, like a flippable Tetris board. So kind of playing two boards at once in a way.
Yeah, you could also do things where like the very bottom left or bottom or one of the tiles on the bottom of the screen has a water outlet and one of the tiles on the left or right of the screen has a power outlet. And you get those sort of water or power tiles, and you have to make sure that they're like strung, like water has to be strung across the bottom, or it always has to be connected enough so that it touches all the tiles. And the same thing with power, like you have to make sure you're getting power to adjacent tiles without interruption.
So, I think we're just about out of time on that one. Let's wind that down and come up with a cool name. I guess City Blocks feels
it's pretty good. City Blocks, man. Yeah, of course, it's better than City Effect, which is the musical visual experience of City Blocks that's done 20 years from now.
I got there eventually. All right, let's switch over to my game today. What I want to do, now that I'm reading it again, I wonder if we've done this exact same thing before. Let's find out. A two-player competitive turn-based Mario Maker type platformer. Both play platformer creators. So one is trying to kill the character and the other is trying to ensure that the character makes it to the end of the course unharmed. Both have a limited pool of obstacles, tools, power-ups, blocks, whatever, that they can use. And they take turns placing the items until they run out of items, and the platformer character just kind of runs the course, lemmings-like, in a way. And then you kind of see like who laid the best traps, or if they were able to prevent the machinations of the evil characters from coming through. So I'm gonna start the clock there.
Now, one thing that I'm trying to poke at here is the plan to do essentially I am Mario making and the other player is playing the level, or I'm making and then a computer is playing?
Right. So the computer's playing it and it's just kind of going on the path And it can do basic things like jumping over obstacles that are immediately in its way, kind of like Super Mario Run. But, you know, it can only jump like maybe two blocks in the air. And so the enemy is trying to kind of anticipate what the character can and can't do and place traps, whereas the protector character is trying to place tools and springs and all sorts of whatever is in the inventory to try to circumnavigate those traps. So each one is kind of like a puzzle.
I do like the idea of when you were first describing it, what was happening in my head was somebody was playing a tiny little section of a level and then it like pauses and the other player gets to place a bunch of things and then they hit go and it's like turn-based of like, I place, you go, you place, I go. And then like this back and forth and like whoever uses like three allotted lives or whatever, it's almost like Super Smash Brothers, whatever the agreed stock is at the beginning of a match is what the challenge is. Can you make it through my Mario Maker level or how far can you make it in my Mario Maker level before you lose all three of your lives?
Maybe the Mario character advances through the stage while it's being built. And so you're either trying to kill him off early or try to save up enough traps to kill him at the end. You know, maybe there's ways to kind of like in Bravely Default to give up a turn to power up another one of your turns later on.
Ooh, maybe one thing you could do is, let's say it's stock three, stock five or whatever. Maybe you can use your lives like mana in Hearthstone, where you sort of trade in a life in order to get access to additional equipment to place in the opponent's level. So the less lives you have, sort of the more lethal your placements can become.
Maybe a part of it is also there are different characters with different abilities. Maybe it's somewhat randomized in a way. So you kind of have to like discover as you go what the character can and can't do. I guess that could lead to some unfair deaths if you're not able to prepare for, you know, if you thought that an easy trap would be easy to for the character to circumnavigate, but he can't jump, for instance, and that would be a problem. It'd feel kind of like an unfair balance. But maybe there are like four or five different characters and you kind of have to think differently and strategize differently for each of them.
Yeah, that would be interesting. And if you wanted to bring some balance to it, you could do things like if the other player is going to be playing as Yoshi or Peach and has a specific type of special jump, then there are certain blocks that you get access to that make it more challenging for that character and are delisted from you because that character wouldn't be able to navigate them well. And then, I mean, like the Mario universe lends itself nicely because so much of it is balanced against multiple characters that they've been working with over the years, but you know, potentially there's a way to sort of mix and match depending on the player characters chosen or even the theme of the level. Like I can imagine what version of Mario it is almost becomes like a Mortal Kombat stage select or something.
Yeah. So I think this would work really well, both as kind of a one player or a two player thing. Are there other wrinkles we can bring to this, other modes that could make this more interesting?
I do like the idea of a simultaneous kind of mode where person, like essentially whoever's playing the character that's platforming is playing split screen on the left and the placer is playing split screen on the right. But it is kind of each player has half of the screen that they can own, but it's actually connected as a level. So one is like dropping things essentially right in front of the other person and they're kind of dodging and stuff. And what you could do instead of limiting blocks is essentially put placing things on a cooldown. So you're always trying to find like toggle between, man, if I could just get to, you know, a flying Goomba, then a chain chomp really quick, I'll be able to really set up something lethal.
This would be a great three-player Wii U game to play in a way that the Wii U was never intended to play if you had two game pads and the one player on the TV, where the player on the TV is playing the Mario, you know, just jumping along and trying to get to the end of the course. One of the players on the game pads can place obstacles, kind of like in New Super Mario Brothers U. You can tap on the gamepad screen to create like blocks in the air. So you can place obstacles, but every obstacle takes like a couple seconds to spawn in, and you can kind of see the little countdown timer around that obstacle. You can see that on either gamepad screen, but you can't see it on the TV. The other player on the gamepad is the protector and can, I don't know, draw or place blocks or, you know, whatever it is, and can see the incoming obstacles and is doing whatever he or she can to prevent Mario from taking any harm.
That's interesting. What I thought you were going to say is one person was doing obstacles or like enemies, one was doing landscape and one was doing Mario. And then you could actually do, if all three of the experiences were staggered out in front of each other, like landscape gets a 5-second countdown or a 10-second countdown, then enemy placer gets a 10-second countdown, and then Mario starts, and Mario is essentially playing a level that is always like 20 seconds in front of him, for all intents and purposes. And so you almost get,
I just
like
think that like it's always so easy to make an actually impossible course in Mario Maker that like,
right,
if you're not trying specifically to make a fair and balanced course, then it'll trend towards impossibility. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I want to find a way to for that to not be the default state.
Like maybe there's essentially no way for the person who's doing landscape to actually create, you know, endless pits or impossible jumps, and then the person who's like doing obstacles can't really place enemies with enough density that it would be crazy. You almost want to feel like everybody is playing an endless runner. One is sort of throwing darts at the person, the other is like trying to guide the person. And, you know, if one person's like, oh, I've got a bunch of flying enemies that are up here, and the landscape person's like, okay, well, I've got a slope going up, so we can kind of coordinate that a little bit together.
Yeah, I think an endless runner is a good way to think about it. I mean, I wonder if you could, if you can take the resulting stage and see if people can beat it. You can kind of post the replay in real time, and then people can be the Mario. Although I guess if it's an endless runner, it's probably not that interesting. It would just be like one of those auto courses from Mario Maker.
For the record, Nintendo, if you're listening, the ability to watch a replay and then take in control of that Mario at any point is a very good feature to add to Super Mario Maker.
So you can get to the end of those hard levels, finally.
Is there something here that could feel like a Switch game? Is there a four-player, all Joy-Cons, one Switch, and you have one person that can throw enemies, another that can throw power-ups, and another, and then two maybe that are doing platforming or competing in a platform challenge? And I love the idea of like power-ups being able to be absorbed by Mario. Maybe Luigi is the second player in this scenario, and do the Super Mario Maker thing, and like let, if the person placed a star wrong, like they can create a temporarily invincible hammer bro or something like that.
Yeah. Well, we're out of time, so let's dwell on that another day, and let's come up with a name for this one.
Is this Super Mario Killer? What is this? Super Mario Taker?
Super Mario Destroyer.
I have become Bowser, Destroyer of Mario's.
Bowser, Destroyer of Mario's isn't a bad name at all. I kind of like that.
Yeah, that's fine. And then the person who's is trying to embody Bowser. It's the first good Bowser game that we've gotten in either ever or in a while.
Trying to think of the other ones. I know it was playable in Super Mario RPG and, of course, Smash Bros., but not the main character. I can't think of any main character Bowser games.
I do feel like they've been, for lack of a better term, they've been softening Bowser a little bit over the years. And I feel it's time for Bowser to get his Donkey Kong moment where he is the protagonist.
Yeah, it's about time. Anyways, maybe we can save that for a future pitch. But for now, let's go over to our community. Q, I think that we got a nice email in this week.
Special thank you to Protodome for the use of our theme song.
Well,
Hello,
we're not there
World.
Yet, so.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, special thank you to Protodome for writing in with his very own pitch. You've listened to 100+ episodes of our show now. The snake has eaten itself. the creator of the Playwright theme song, amongst other great tracks, has mm-hmm. written in with a game pitch of his own. Are you ready to hear this thing?
That's fantastic. You know, I'm a big fan of his music, obviously, which is why we picked that track out to open and end every show. And it's cool to know that he's also kind of engaged in the show.
I know, it warms my heart. I was like, oh man, wow.
This is a really nice surprise.
So a good portion, one third of this episode plus is brought to you by Protodome this week. Okay, so Blake writes, "It sounds stupid, but I've been wondering how a bird watching game might work. Twitchers," that's the UK terminology, "are avid bird watchers who are compelled to seek out and spot, quote unquote, rare birds wherever there's a reported sighting. Individuals will travel miles just to get a glimpse of a rare bird. It reminds me of how Satoshi Tajahari was obsessed with collecting beetles as a child, a passion which he channeled to create the Pokemon series. An idea which saw moderate success, as you know. Although I'm not a fan of bird watching myself, it appears to create the same itch as a collectible trading card game or RNG loot drops. My question to you both is, can you find a unique way to distill the compelling nature of bird watching into an addictive video game experience? I imagine a kind of free roaming Pokemon Snap with Metroidvania elements. But that sort of thing might be a bit threadbare, so now I'm really interested to hear what Playwright's take on this is."
All right, let's go ahead and start the clock there. One of the things that's always kind of puzzled me about birdwatching is, how do you ever prove to somebody, like, how do you ever brag about being a good birdwatcher? Because you could just, like, show them your book with every bird checked off, and they're never going to know.
That's true, right? Like, you're like, oh, last week I totally saw the sparrow. It was crazy. I do like the character.
I saw a dodo. That's right. He's just walking around.
You know what's in my yard? Bald eagle. Crazy.
I used to see a bald eagle almost every day on the way to work, actually. There was one that perched up on the 520 bridge.
You got that Washington bird thing going on over there.
Yeah. We have to pay a lot to see the Seahawks, though. It's not fair.
So I guess I agree that I love the idea of Pokemon Snap getting involved a little bit in this, especially with this a little bit being inspired by Pokemon. You can take photos, right? And taking photos is a good way of proving it. And I even like the idea of maybe introducing the BioShock, like, and maybe Pokemon Snap had this, but the BioShock, like, taking enough pictures of a type of species sort of levels up your knowledge of that species so that you can potentially catch them in more rare scenarios, or you earn, like, bird calling equipment for their particular species.
Yeah, so as you learn about a bird species, maybe that incorporates some, like, real life knowledge that helps you be a better bird watcher, gives you hints and tricks as to, like, where to, obviously this is something that would really only work first time around and would be ruined by them looking it up on the internet. But, you know, it would be interesting if, like, if you knew, you know, this type of bird appears in this part of town at this time of day, you can kind of, like, suss out some of those things yourself based on the things that you're learning about it.
We're kind of not even addressing the elephant in the room here in Pokemon Go. Maybe this whole thing is where, in a little bit, I'm just saying, pitching an app for bird watchers to say that they've spotted a bird in an area and be able to tell others that this bird is in this particular area right now. And then there's, like, a way to capture that with your smartphone and actually prove that you did indeed see this species of bird.
Yeah, if you're gamifying it, you'd have to find some way to, like, validate it. So are we talking about real birds, or are we talking about, like, Pokemon Go AR creatures?
I mean, I was talking about real birds, but I'd like either idea.
Yeah, okay. So if we do want to incorporate real birds, I mean, one of the things about Pokemon that I always like is just, like, filling out my Pokedex, seeing, encountering, catching more of the creatures, just kind of checks them off in the box. And so I think it'd be kind of cool to just have, like, an app that can recognize real birds and can check them off as you take pictures of them. You know, you start with pigeons and seagulls and stuff, and you work your way up to the rarer stuff, the hummingbirds and whatnot. But
one thing that you could do as a mechanic is, you're taking pictures of the birds, and for the person who's very casual. This is just about their own life and adventure and self-fulfillment. They take the picture. It's cataloged. You know, what's done is done. But then for the people who are really maybe a little bit more competitive or more of an enthusiast, you can submit your picture for confirmation from the community. And then in order to get your bird picture confirmed, you have to say confirm, you know, 3 to 5 bird pictures yourself. So you're always kind of running a net positive in terms of confirmations. So you get that virtuous loop of, okay, the community's going to validate you, but you also have to validate the community. And there's that sort of self-policing aspect to it.
Yeah. Okay, so I feel like we're playing it pretty safe here and just kind of sticking to...
bird watching.
Yeah. Let's see if we can unlock kind of that next layer. Let's get creative here. Let's spread our wings a little bit, so to speak. I was thinking of like, let's really frog fraction this thing. So maybe if this
I'm so curious to find out what your definition of frog fracturing something is. Hiding it in an elaborate way?
Yeah, yeah. So maybe this is like a game that you can play on a console, and it's like a 3D open world type of game where you're going around taking pictures of birds and stuff, but there are things that you can do to interact with the world in unexpected ways. The world can react to things that you take pictures of or don't take pictures of. Maybe, you know, there are certain areas you can go to, and if you take a picture in the right direction, you can see a ghost, you know, that kind of like fun stuff that you get in like Grand Theft Auto and Hitman games and stuff like that. Or maybe there's entire sub stories that play out if you are accidentally or intentionally taking pictures inside people's windows, then like you could get arrested, and then you have to go through this entire like story arc of your court case and that kind of thing. I don't know, like, what is the next layer we can bring to this to take the mechanics of this game and turn it into something really unique?
I guess in the spirit of that, I also, while you were saying that, I thought you were headed in the direction of, can you take this bird watching game but set it in the trappings of something kind of absurdist like a Grand Theft Auto? And you get guns and you can kill people and you can drive like a maniac and cops can chase you and all this stuff. But like the only quests are to spot birds. And the only way to like earn achievements and stuff is with bird spotting. So you have like essentially this entire insano play box, or sandbox rather, but you're really just trying to be a bird watcher.
I do like that. That is that's very funny. Just deny people use of your amazing world that you've created.
You know, like, this game's incredible. I can drive a boat, an airplane. But like all the quests are like, I'm looking for, God, I wish I knew the names of birds. A something spotted something. Here, this is, thank you, Blake. You've made me Google cool bird names. So that's now in my search history.
And they're all like Charlie the Eagle and stuff like that. It's like, no, I don't have a pet bird that I'm trying to name.
Yeah, no. So you searched for the same thing.
Was that actually a result?
The top result is Charlie.
Really?
Yes.
That's not even a cool human name.
No, it really isn't. Okay, so what else about bird watching is there to catch? He's sitting here, he's talking about people are just trying to check them off a list. Is there something more extreme of checking out the list? Maybe you're like trying to find things behaving like birds or behaving strange or something like that?
Maybe as you play, kind of like her story, you learn more inferred information about your character. So maybe you're trying to discover the bird that killed your father, or maybe you're trying to take pictures of a bird that has like a piece of crime scene evidence stuck to its leg or something. I don't know what it would be, but you know, there's some deeper story that as you take more pictures, and then you're taking pictures of like government documents, and I don't know what would be a fun way to spin this so that this very innocent game can kind of unravel into this twisted conspiracy.
I like the idea of leveraging the trope that's in a ton of sci-fi movies where You have the scientist who is a scientist in a seemingly unimportant field of science that eventually is like predicting the end of the world because he's like, it's the birds have been acting strange this whole time. So like the idea of you are in a bird watching game, but maybe it has a little bit more of a, you know, Earth-like sort of setting. The birds are slowly revealing a conspiracy to you about like behavior of the end of the world or something like that.
Okay. It's getting very complicated, but we are out of time. So I don't know where that leaves us, but we have a bird watching game. What are we going to call this one?
God, Hitchcock already took the birds, right?
Go for a Croto Dome. That's a little.
Oh my God.
Pretty bad.
Pokemon stands for pocket monsters. Is there like a something we can smash up against bird that would or
oh, the Crokemon. Obviously I have one joke and that's just rhyming stuff with crow.
He said they're called Twitchers here. Like Twitchers actually, is kind of a cool name.
Yeah, let's append that with something. What would be we can go for the Twitcher 3 Wild Hunt.
Oh, the Twitcher, dude. Oh my God, you just found it. I was going to say the Twitcher conspiracy or something like that, but that's a little bit more Twin Peaks. The Twitcher, that's what's going to get us the hits.
Yeah, get all those misspellings on Google. We'll finally direct some of that traffic our way.
That's absolutely right.
All right, that is The Twitcher. Thank you very much, Protodome, for sending that one in. And do feel free to write in anytime you want. That goes for everybody, of course, in our community, whether you are a musician or not. You can email us, playwrightcast@gmail.com. You can go to our website, playwrightcast.com/pitch, or you can tweet us at playwrightcast.
I already said all that wonderful stuff, but why not? Special thank you once more to Protodome for writing in and for the use of our theme song, Hello World, off that album, Blue Noise. And don't forget, if you're interested in this week's episode, you can purchase thetwitcher.com for $2,410, according to hover.com. So go scoop
up
that
Twitch
domain.
That's driving that price up. That's kind of unfair.
Yeah. Yeah. There's no overlap in what we're trying to offer.
Ruined us again, Bezos.
And go check out the other great shows on the Kane and Rinse Network. By the way, we are starting to plan end of the year stuff. I shouldn't say we. Really, H is starting to plan end of the year stuff. And I'm looking at the list of games, and what an incredible year it turned out to be for video games.
Well, more on that on the Kane and Rinse Network soon enough, within the next few months. Anyways, to take us out of the show, why don't you come up with a miniature pitch?
This one is the lowest hanging fruit. Please, God, an F-Zero proper sequel.
All right, that's skirting the line there, but we'll let it pass for now.
Hold on, wait. An F-Zero sequel where you can get out of your vehicle just like, what is that? Oh, what's that great sci-fi shooter? It was on Vita.
Oh yeah, Velocity.
You can get out of your vehicle like Velocity and finally go wreck shop as Captain Falcon.
All right, thank you very much. We'll see you next week, everyone.
Bye.